You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A very fitting way to mark this day, the 120th birthday of George Gershwin. He left such a tremendous mark on American music despite his short life. Gershwin died of brain cancer when he was only 38. University of Michigan medical historian and PBS contributor Dr. Howard Markel is with us now to celebrate the too short life of George Gershwin. I know the New York Times wrote in those years after World War I, Gershwin was to music what F. Scott Fitzgerald was to prose.
Isn't it a lovely line?
It is a wonderful line. So let's start right at the end of his life. He went into a coma July 11th, 1937.
Yes, but the symptoms really began earlier, around February 11th, to be specific. He was performing with the Los Angeles Symphony Orchestra his Concerto in F, which is not as commonly performed as some of his other pieces, but is well worth listening to. And Gershwin, of course, was a wonderful pianist. And so he was playing the piano solo, and he had what we now call an absence seizure, where you are sitting or you're standing or you're in a position that you were. You don't collapse, but you lose consciousness for 10 or 20 or 30 seconds. And he actually missed several bars of the piece. And then he woke up and resumed playing. He also reported having an olfactory hallucination. You know, hallucinations are not just what you can see. They are sometimes what you hear, and in this case, what you could smell.
What was he smelling?
He was smelling burnt rubber, the smell of burning tires, he said. And he saw a doctor, and no one really knew what was going on with him, of course. It was quite early in the history of neurosurgery, let alone brain cancer, and his symptoms were rather vague. You know, he was depressed, he was neurotic, he was irritated, he was irritable.
Had he had a personality change in the months leading up to all of this?
Or? Well, Gershwin had a very interesting personality to begin with. Some would say he was very full of himself. Dizzy Dean would say, you know, it ain't bragging if you did it. And so he was very proud of his accomplishments, and he was, after all, George Gershwin. He was the greatest composer of his era.
And he's in his 30s.
Yes. And he was not just composing Tin Pan Alley songs or hit musicals. He was also performing classical pieces that were being lauded and played in symphony halls all across North America and in Europe. So he was quite a big deal. And he would refer to himself in a third person. You know, Gershwin did this. Gershwin did that. So he was known for being a difficult handful. And he was, like many many people of his ilk, somewhat neurotic. But he started having terrible headaches as well. And he started, after February of 37, started having more of these episodes of absence seizures, of headaches, of smelling burning rubber.
And nobody could put it
together. No. He was seeing a psychoanalyst at the time. And finally, the psychoanalyst said, you got to see an internist and we got to get you worked up. So he went and had a full battery of tests at the Cedars of Lebanon Hospital in Beverly Hills. And they didn't find much. They wanted to do a spinal tap, which might have been diagnostic in terms of the cells that they discovered. They might have seen malignant cells in his spinal fluid. But he said, you know, that I don't want to go through that. It was a very painful procedure. Yeah. And he didn't want to go through it. So he went home. And then he became more depressed, more irritable. He had several episodes where his headaches were so blinding he had to leave. He was once at a dinner party thrown by Irving Berlin. Boy, I'd love to be at that party. And another, a luncheon with Paulette Goddard, who was Charlie Chaplin's wife for a few years. She was in Modern Times. He fell in love with Paulette, but she spurned his affections. And that made him very sad as well. But nobody really knew what was going on.
And did you say at one point somebody sent him home with a diagnosis of hysteria?
Yes. Yes. So male hysteria was a diagnosis invented by Sigmund Freud in the 1880s because no one believed that men could become hysterical. After that point, then sure, there are a lot of men who are hysterical. I think I'm one of them. But he was sent home with a psychogenic diagnosis. So it was in his head. They didn't really realize how right they were.
So what happened July 9th, 1937?
Well, as he got more irritable and difficult to handle his own daily functions, a male nurse was hired, and Ira Gershwin came over, his brother and lyricist. They were both in Hollywood, by the way, writing a musical for Samuel Goldwyn called The Goldwyn Follies. And George was asleep all day. It was till 5 o'clock in the afternoon that he woke up. And he was so weak that they had to literally pick him up and put him into bed. Very quickly after that, he fell into a coma. They rushed him to the hospital, to Cedars. And the neurosurgeons there contacted Walter Dandy, who was the greatest neurosurgeon of his era. He was at Johns Hopkins. He was actually on the eastern shore of Maryland with the governor of Maryland on a cruise.
So he's on the other side of the country.
Other side of the country, and they're connecting. You know, this wasn't the era of cell phones or even long-distance lines, so it was a very difficult chore to get him connected. He left immediately, but by the time he got to Newark, New Jersey, to get into the train to travel to Los Angeles, which would have taken several days, they had already rushed him into the operating room for brain surgery.
And then from there?
There was such a large tumor, a glioblastoma, which is the same tumor that killed John McCain a few weeks ago and killed Ted Kennedy a few years back.
And Beau Biden.
Yes.
Senator Biden's
son. It is the
son.
Most common form of brain cancer. It's very aggressive. Today, after diagnosis and initial surgery or treatment, people live 12 to 18 months. Back then, you were diagnosed so late. There's no CAT scans. There's no MRIs. And plain x-rays, there was something called a ventriculogram, which was actually invented by Walter Dandy, where you injected air into the spinal column by means of a lumbar puncture, and you try to delineate if there's a tumor or not with air acting as contrast. It's not a very good way to look at the brain. It's also very painful.
Okay, so that...
So there really wasn't a lot you could do back then.
He went into the coma July 11th, and when did he die?
He died shortly after coming out of the operating room. He never regained consciousness, so he died the next morning at 10:30.
Would there have been any real value in an earlier diagnosis?
Well, you know, Walter Dandy made a comment about that. There wouldn't have been. There was no real chemotherapeutic agents or radiation therapy that would have helped. He would have gotten progressively worse and lost milestones. And as Dandy said, for someone so brilliant, for a genius like this to rapidly decline and lose milestones in terms of what he could or could not do would have been sheer torture.
The too short life of George Gershwin on this, his 120th birthday. University of Michigan medical historian Howard Markell, thank you so much.
Thank you.